That's me on the podcast, sharing a song with something to say about it. With Thin Lear and Niagara Moon, losing my opinion.
Well, welcome, friends. We are not two today. We are three.
Yeah.
I see Nathaniel Safran in the chat.
Hello. This is what, my like fifth time on this podcast?
You're a recurring special guest, yeah.
Wow. Have I exceeded other guests, I feel like, in frequency?
I think Tom's got you by one or two.
Tom Rainey?
Yeah. Tom Rainey. None other.
Oh, fuck, man.
You'll take him out.
I'll take him out, yeah, for sure.
Keep working at it.
Yeah. Exactly.
What's your question for Nate?
Well, I wanted to know, since he is the resident bad boy.
Oh, God.
Losing my opinion. If he ever feels pressure to live up to that reputation.
Are you promoting my OnlyFans?
I was trying to transition into that.
But. Okay, thank you.
Nate, how you been doing? Normally, we got some preamble before we bring guests into the fold, but we got Nate Safran back. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I am very, really curious about your background right now in this chat.
I got a photo of Roger Waters humorously crossing his arms on what looks like the Piers Morgan show, maybe.
I feel like I'm triggered.
You're not a Roger Waters fan, historically.
No,
I am, for the most part.
I am a Pink Floyd fan.
Yeah.
Nate got me into Pink Floyd. Yeah. By the way, I mean, I like Dark Side of the Moon, you know, like I like everyone. Like I like Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here, right? I like those records. But Nate got me into Corporal Clegg and all, like, just stuff I never would have listened to.
Weirdo Syd Barrett stuff.
Yeah, Saucer Full of Secrets.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a gummer.
Life at Pompeii.
Oh, Life at Pompeii. Yeah.
So good.
I like The Wall.
I don't like The Wall.
I like The Final Cut.
I don't like that either. I do like Animals. And we're going to talk about, let's just get into this.
You want to plow right into it?
Kind of. Because I have a lot to say. Do we want to introduce the show first? Should we do that?
We'll introduce the show. Let's take care of business up top. Right. This is the often humorous.
Always bad.
Music podcast. Losing My Opinion. I am Dune 2 score by Hans Zimmer, admiring indie artist Niagara Moon, a.k.a. Thomas Irwin.
I am perplexed and frustrated indie artist Thin Lear, a.k.a. Matt Longo. All right, so Nate, I lost this game that Thomas and I played a couple months back. I had to choose songs that I thought he would hate. He chose songs that he thought I would love, and I lost by a slim margin. So my punishment
I listened to this. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I think you did it twice. I think I listened to the second version. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So
we've done one each, but for some reason I don't get a punishment. Only Matt does today.
Yeah, he made it out of that one all right. I think we got to go back and correct that. But anyway, so my options were I could come on here and talk about my own music, which is like a little bit too cruel, I think, to do that.
That's what I thought.
Also, I'm about to talk about your music. So
yay!
Great. You are a resident bad boy.
That thought has crossed my mind.
That's so brutal.
I was actually thinking about like remixing both your songs and stuff, and then comparing the remixes. But like,
let's go.
I didn't do it. It's like a lot of.
I'll give you the stems.
All right, so brutal. Sweet.
But having done what I did, I don't know. I don't know if I made the right choice. So my other choice was to dig into the solo discography of Roger Waters, like in its entirety. Go comb through, find my least favorite songs. Not even my favorite, like my least favorite out of all of those records.
Is this before or after I made that joke this past week about Radio Chaos?
It's got to be before, and then
that's crazy.
To that.
I don't know what the joke is. I'm the one who doled out the punishment. So
I mean, we're going to talk about it. About it. This was a slog. There were some parts of it that were very surprising and that I did enjoy.
Yeah.
But I would say on the whole, but let's just get into it. I want to say up top. Go ahead, Thomas.
How many albums? How many solo Roger Waters albums?
I don't know. I listened to maybe five records. There was like operas in there. I wasn't going to listen to the operas. I cut out anything classical. I was like, this does not count for me.
I didn't know he did operas.
Yeah. He has an opera. He's got another classical piece. He did a reworking of Dark Side of the Moon that just seems to kind of be like a fuck you to everyone
I thought that that's what you were going to bring up. I actually listened to it kind of recently.
Did you like it?
It's actually better than I would have expected. It's
fine.
Not good, but it's like not horrible.
How are you going to do anything near the quality of the original fucking, like?
No, you can't.
What is that?
I don't think it was a point.
Waste of time.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that exercise was. It's like a spoken word album because of the way that his voice is now.
Yeah. He's went full like Lou Reed.
It's a real Lou Reed type thing. He also had a rendition. He had like a rendition record called The Lockdown Sessions, which sounds like maybe like a Van Morrison tribute or something. But
Lockdown just Sessions. Again,
more of his old stuff. But yeah. let's just say right up top, I do think he's a great songwriter.
Yeah.
For a period of time, like most great songwriters, for a period of time, he's just truly excellent. Obviously, he's the driving force of Pink Floyd's greatest work in tandem with David Gilmour. I don't even think that's an argument to say that. He's the co-architect. Like when one of them is not there, like it's just not the same.
I still like the final cut, but I'll take your point.
I think my issue with Roger Waters' songwriting is that at some point it became more lyrics focused and lyrics focused in a way whereas like the music was very much secondary to the lyrics,
to the message.
And like, also it's like, maybe like even the melodies were just like, okay, this melody kind of has to fit, the syllables have to fit my lyrics versus the other way around almost, you know? And that's a style of songwriting I generally don't like, but when it's doubled, when you compound that with a person's voice I don't particularly like in their delivery, like in their later stage of Pink Floyd and his solo career, plus I didn't really care much for his lyrics in the later stuff, it's like a pretty shitty mix, right?
Yeah, we're gonna get into some of that mix that you're talking about. I remember hearing him, I don't remember what the song was, I mean, be careful with that axe, Eugene, songs like that where he was blowing his voice out when he was younger, and I think that's a part of it why everything kind of sounds like that.
Yeah,
he was a good screamer,
and I think you pay the price for that kind of thing. But we're gonna ignore all the Morrissey-esque things that he says and does, and just focus on the tunes today. Not gonna bring any of that stuff in.
The politics.
I don't want people.
Good. I don't want to cover it.
Hoping we'd go through all that up top.
It'll be the first half of the episode.
Yeah.
I don't want people to misconstrue my thoughts about him. Like, obviously, he's great. You know, even when I say I don't like The Wall, like, you know, there are songs on there that are brilliant. It's just not for two albums worth. But having said that, at the end of the Pink Floyd run, he was writing a whole slew of songs that were just not for me. Not a huge fan of most of The Wall. When he overtook the band, I think it was a problem. You could argue that happened even on Animals, but like, there's enough collaboration there, which still works.
And it's that one's still more jammy.
Yeah, and also the melody, like even on the song Animals, like if you didn't care, like I like that melody.
It's Pigs exactly on the Wing, parts one and two.
Right, Pigs on the Wing. That song, I think, has a strong melody, but it is what Nate's talking about, but it's the beginning of it. But I still like it because the melody is good.
I agree. I personally really like Animals, but it is probably the last thing that they did where like I like the whole album.
Yeah.
And where like that style kind of emerges, but before it's like problematic and like not my jam.
Yes. So I'm gonna say I'll tell you both when I feel like something is just not for me, and then when I feel like there's
not for anyone.
So all right, let's just go through. All right, the first record I listened to is the first solo record. It's called The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. Have either of you heard it?
Nope.
Yeah. So I listened to all of his Pink Floyd when I probably introduced you to Pink Floyd. Actually, at that point, I think Radiohead was my favorite band, but like Pink Floyd through the ages of like 16 to 18 was my favorite band. Mm-hmm. And so I went through all of the solo Roger Waters stuff. And like, even then at the height of my fandom,
yeah,
I think I listened to each one of these once because none of them are particularly good.
And this was between all the dates you were going on, right? At that point.
Oh yeah. Just, you know, usually,
in between the dating is when you listen to the Roger Waters
on the way to dates coming back.
No, he'd play him in the car for the lady.
Exactly. They're like the pros and cons of hitchhiking. Well, I could get out of this fucking car with you. So I could, that's a pro.
So this album, I don't know what this is. I don't know what this record is. I can't put my finger on what he's doing.
It's a concept album.
It's about a man's midlife crisis.
Yeah.
This record has a whole lot of him whispering into the mic and singing in unison with a woman. They seem to be in bed for most of the album. And then on like, so what he does on this record is every other song he's screaming. And then this song that comes after he's whispering again. There are so many songs on this record that sound like Working Class Hero by John Lennon, but with like 80s noir production and saxophone.
Oh boy.
Make of that what you will.
You're that kind of sounds it. Cool, actually.
It's not. You're going to hear it. It plays out like a stage show. And he has this melodic motif, like going back to Animals and what Nate was saying. There's a melodic motif here that he keeps returning to. It never stops. It's like every other song he comes back to this melody. Sometimes it'll be back-to-back melodies, the same one, for like five-minute songs. And this is the melody, and you're going to hear that this song is called "Done Roman, Done Karen, Done Living."
Spelled weirdly.
It sounds like it's like a Scotch.
It's like, maybe it's a yeah. Scotch.
Done Karen.
Yeah, right.
D-U-N-C-A-R-I-N. That gives you an idea. Also known as 4:58 a.m.
Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. It's also called 4:58 a.m. because every song on the record is a time. I guess it's through the night. This guy's having some sort of experience. But I'll let you both listen to it. This was my least favorite song off this record. And I also say I like the ambition of this record. And looking back on it with the next two records that I listened to, I really came to appreciate this one a lot more.
So sorry about the dog noises in the background.
I don't hear anything.
My dog. Oh, you can't? Okay, good. All right.
It's like it's good. It mixes into the Pink Floyd theme.
It's Animals. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. It's like a good Animals yeah. thing. Yeah. It's like Seamus.
Right.
So this video here, 4:58 a.m., this has 45 views on YouTube. I haven't heard any of this. I know a little bit.
Wait, you didn't listen to any of this and you made me listen to it?
Yes, sir. Oh, it was
what am I, like a satellite into
for
this?
Thee, not for me. I have heard a little bit of Amused to Death. That's the one I'm a little more familiar with. I never heard any of this stuff.
Oh, I got a lot to say about Amused to Death, but yeah.
How many solo albums does Roger Waters have?
I don't know. Matt only listened
like
to five
or six. I listened to five or six.
Because I listened to Radio Chaos, President Cons of Hitchhiking, Amused to Death, and yeah, that new reworking of Dark Side.
But it was really four that I dug into.
He's got another one. Is This the Life We Really Want?
That one, okay, that I have stuff to say about too. That one was surprising.
Oh yeah, he doesn't have a ton. He's only got,
I think it's like four.
Oh, okay.
Including the Lockdown Sessions and the Dark Side of the Moon Redux. He's got like seven. That's not a ton.
But that's mixing in classical. There's a Stravinsky thing
that
he does.
Like, we're talking about 40 years here since he went solo. That's pretty modest amount. Okay.
Sure.
Gotcha. Well, anyway, we're going to start off modest here. 4:58 a.m. by Roger Waters, The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. This is from like 1981.
I have no idea. I don't care.
82. This was when Roger Waters pitched The Wall to Pink Floyd. He was like, you can do this concept or the concept that
of
became this
man
album.
Having a midlife crisis. They're like, we'll take The Wall, please.
This has its origins in the Pink Floyd era for sure. Yeah.
You guys might love this too. I also acknowledge that this record is this is not one of those things where it's for no one. Like I could see people liking this. Maybe if I was like 15 and like heavily into prog, I might have let this into my brain. Fully.
Well, I could tell you that I experienced this as someone who was like 16 and really into prog. And even then I didn't really like this. So but I'm really excited actually to hear it. Because I haven't heard in like 20 years.
All right, here we go.
I would think you must have liked the album cover.
Yeah, it's
oh,
great.
God.
started at 30 seconds in. That's where things really start to pick up.
That's the deal.
Here we go. Kept my heart
in dark ruins. I'm out.
Shut up.
It's Working Class Hero, right? So over the hill. Roman, done caring, done living.
Took my girl to the country to sleep out under the moon.
Alex thinks she's going crazy.
There's not a lot going on here. Except the sound effects.
She waits for the real Mr. Right to come. Gently removing her heart. With his promises of real communication. Always picking up the tab of Billy Bungalow for his mama and dad.
It's like the most Roger Waters combination of things happening.
I know.
There's nothing distinct happening, though, either.
But you were asleep.
It was me!
Can't you bones?
It sounds like if Bill Hader and Fred Armisen did like a parody of Pink Floyd.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the documentary now of like The Wall or something.
Yeah, that's embarrassing, bro. That's not good.
Animals has a great melody though, and that motif, he comes back to that. It's at least half of the songs on the record is that melody.
But what melody? It's so unmemorable. Oh, shit! It's like that. Yeah, you really nailed it. It's just like all of the worst elements of Roger Waters all in like 1 2-minute snippet. It's sweet like extraneous package. British whispering.
So nasally.
Just like wangsty guitar. That's like, I mean, some of the indulgent guitar of Pink Floyd is like my favorite shit ever.
Sure. Yeah.
Because just David Gilmour is incredible, but now it's not David Gilmour. And
it's a guy who sounds like David Gilmour.
Yeah. And also the stuff with like, it's a weak melody that he's just like forcing lyrics into, right? Like everything was nailed there. Like
there's a lot of lyrics on this record. He's a lot of explaining to do in this story.
Yeah, it's like a Christopher Nolan film of like a concept album. It's like 80% of it is like just dialogue, what's it called? Explanatory dialogue, like
a lot exposition. Of
expository.
Yeah, expository.
Yeah. Suppository.
I gotta reiterate, I fucking love the final cut, and I love Waters' songwriting on there. I love the melodies. I love everything about it. And this is like the ugly, half-assed, rushed, just nothing version of that. So I'm hearing this as like, I want to like these. I am the guy who gave you this assignment to punish you, not me.
Sure.
But that was real limp. That was some real dog shit.
It's a bit limp. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, things actually do take a turn now. So the next song we're going to listen to is from Radio Chaos, which Nate alluded to
Nate's earlier. Favorite.
Nate's favorite record. Could not decide which song to pick from this one, so I chose the title track. It was either going to be this or a song called Who Needs Information. They're both sort of neck and neck. This record is just not for me. I swear I listened to the whole album. This is the first song on it, so it doesn't seem like I did. But Waters himself has regrets about this record. Shockingly, it's another concept album. Here's the thing I notice about him. On the faster songs, he doesn't focus on lyrics so much, to the point where like they don't even really have lyrics. And then on the slower tunes, they're just jam-packed with narrative. He's also obsessed with saxophone on these early records. Like he's making some kind of point on this, both of these songs, but it's going over my head. So Radio Waves is the song we're going to listen to. Definitely different direction sonically. But I think actually a bit worse, in my opinion.
So you said that this one's not for you. Do you think this is for anyone? If it's not even for Roger Waters, do you think?
I mean, I'm sure there are a bunch of Roger Waters fans that's like, oh, this is my favorite record.
This one has 56,000 views. That's quite a bit more.
He's deep in the 80s now. So like imagine, okay, so just picture this. Like every artist is going through the like their style of the 80s, their style difficulties of the 80s. And now he's like deeply in that problem now as well, like production wise. So yeah, just combine that with everything we just heard.
Yeah.
All right, I'm getting ready for some gated reverb galore here. Oof.
I've been listening to all those like Leonard Cohen 80s albums.
Well, those are just amusingly crazy. Like the production on those with his like Klezmer Casio.
Klezmer Casio,
yeah.
All right. This is from 1987, a glorious year in rock history. Here we go. Radio waves.
It's like the Jerky Boys.
You hear radio waves in your head.
Ooh. Ooh. I feel like this is like the intro to Top Gun. Radio waves. Radio waves.
He hears radio waves. Radio waves. Oh, God. So old already. AM, FM, weather and news. Our leaders had a frank exchange of views. Are you confused? Radio waves. Radio waves. Radio waves. This is when I started to get mad at you. It's like around this point.
Because, like, Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking was, like, still kind of amusing to listen to. It's interesting somewhat.
It's not bad.
Vocals are just so bad on this one.
Yeah. It sounds like you'd be in, like, Streets of Rage. Some, like, 80s beat-em-up, like, video game.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. That's that beat.
Radio waves. I just, like, picture throwing, like, garbage cans and henchmen. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So that's Radio Chaos. And that whole record kind of sounds like that. It's just
80s pop with no pop singer.
Yeah. It's just, they just got Roger Waters on it.
I got to say, that was straight ass, but I would definitely listen to that over the first track.
The first one? Wow. Okay. Yeah.
He's a sucker for that beat.
Yeah, exactly.
This record, Amused to Death, is the next one we're going to listen to. This comes after Radio Chaos. This record is my least favorite.
Oh shit.
The song we're gonna listen to is called Perfect Sense Part 2, which is great. This is like a quintessential Roger Waters song. Again, it's like the documentary Now Roger Waters song. I can't think of any other elements that are needed to demonstrate that this is a Roger Waters song. Spoken word from radio broadcasts, there's a choir of gospel singing, it's a lumbering tempo, an extremely confusing narrative that's like a metaphor about World War II.
Those are all the Waters hallmarks, so I will give you that.
Record is called Amused to Death. This one was making me miss that middle-aged crisis concept album. Like, I was yearning for that. Because at least that one didn't really delve into politics. And I think the further he goes into that, I know we were going to talk about this, but the further he delves into that in his music, like, the further he gets from melody. So listen to this song. Maybe I'm off base. Maybe I was just, like, disgruntled by this point. But I was on record 3. So, yeah.
Well, please tell me you only listened to 3 of these.
No, I listened to another 2 records after this.
Oh, God, Thomas, you're sadistic.
Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, I was at a certain point, I started off like, you know, pretty attentive, and then I was just like doing other stuff mostly.
Yeah.
But I was hearing it. I was digesting it. And I did stop at one point when I heard something I really liked, which we will talk about.
I will say, Thin Lear, this album has at least one song that I can kind of get into. What God Wants Part 2?
That is the worst song on that record, and we're going to talk about it next. So I don't know what is happening in your brain.
I kind of like this flow there. I like the ominous beat. I don't know, that one had a little something to it. I don't remember this one at all. Perfect Sense Part 2.
We're going to talk about What God Wants, because I have strong God feelings wants, about that one.
God gets, God help us all.
Yeah, man. I mean, Nate, listen to that. Come on.
I don't remember it at all. I'm really excited. It sounds like a concept for like a Randy Newman song, but Randy Newman would probably make a banger
what
out of that.
God, what?
Yeah, exactly.
You know he has a broken neck, Randy Newman?
Randy Newman.
That he was hunched. You see him in recent performances, he's sort of hunched over.
It's a broken neck.
He went to the doctor, he has a broken neck. Yeah, he had to get surgery. And yeah,
no, it's terrible. Randy.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Oh my God, that album cover.
This is a striking cover. This does not look like it's from, does not look like it's from 1992. It's a baby sitting in front of a giant TV that's like right zoomed in on an eyeball. So it's a precursor to the iPad generation. He's making some Gen Alpha comments here.
Oh, yeah. The
song is called Perfect Sense Part 2. Here we go.
Can you say?
Get the fuck out.
It all makes perfect sense.
Oh, my God.
Roger Waters nursery rhymes.
Expressed in dollars and cents, pounds, shillings, and pence.
Nate, I knew that. You know you'd like this one a lot.
Can't you see? It all makes perfect sense.
Oh, the military
snare. Military drum.
Here you go. Here it comes.
I do like this more than the other two. This is my favorite so far.
This part's better.
Also, Marv Albert's on the song.
Hey, that's pretty awesome.
Yes!
I'm sure he has biting commentary.
Oh, God.
Stuff like that just ruins any replay value for me.
The found recording thing?
Yeah, something like this.
Okay, I think we get that, right? We understand that. So let's listen to the song What God Wants, which I feel like that's the one where I had to take a break. Because I think that
really
one,
made your list. Wow.
It was making
the
me
one
mad.
That I'm kind of like, I'm into this. Part two?
Yeah, part two. Sorry, I don't remember if there's a part one. There's a lot of part twos on this record.
I will say with that last one, like the most pleasing part of it was when there's just choir of women because he's not singing. Right.
Yeah.
It's like the Great Gig in the Sky effect, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, you know, that song has pretty great piano. And like that woman, she sounds great. It's like, in retrospect, funny how fucking over the top it is, but like it's a great song. This one, you know, what's backing, it's not the, you know, Rick Wright backing piano and everything. So it's like, it's nice that it's the absence of Roger Waters, but like there's nothing propelling it to make me like it.
This is like when I played Lulu for Thomas, and his favorite part of what I played him was when, it was just an orchestra and you couldn't hear Lou Reed or Metallica.
Yeah.
And it was just,
yeah.
He's like, oh, I like this part. It was like, well, neither of them are on it.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
That's great.
Let's listen to this one. This one, I feel like it's just really heavy handed. It's got that Documentary Now feel. It's like a parody of a late period Pink Floyd song.
He kind of raps on this one, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit of that. I don't disagree with the politics of it, but it's just like, there has to be music there. And it goes back to what Nate was talking about. Like, there's a difference between Power to the People and Give Me Some Truth, right? Like, there's a difference between those two songs. One of them is a statement, and one of them is a great song. So it's like, you know, I feel like that's where he got
Give Me Some Truth is the lame pick.
No, I love Give Me Some Truth. Power to the People I feel like is a whack.
Power to the, well, they're both kind of inconsequential for me, but Give Me Some Truth, that's always been a skip for me.
Oh, I like Give Me Some Truth.
Interesting.
Well, but anyway, a song that has a melody and is memorable and has strong arrangement and is just, and then versus one that is just
a chant,
a message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, both are far better tunes than anything from the solo Roger Waters catalog.
Yeah, I take Power to the People any day. Yeah.
This is funny because I was literally going to be like, oh, and on the other hand, to balance things out, maybe this one's half decent. This was your least favorite
pick. This is my least favorite.
Of all. What are the odds?
This is just something about it that just, I don't know. Maybe let me listen again, because maybe I was in a bad...
I like how ominous this one sounds.
Yeah, I didn't get that from it, but...
Ooh. Wrangler jeans. EMC trucks.
God wants dollars. God wants cents. God wants pants. Shillings and pence.
Shillings and pence. Funky.
God wants killers, God wants krona, God wants Swiss francs, and God wants French francs.
You like this one?
It's kind of funky. And it has a hook, eventually.
God wants scudos, God wants pesetas, don't send lyrica, don't want small potatoes. God wants smoke tans, God wants pain, God wants clean up rock campaigns. God wants widows, God wants solutions, God wants
crowd
TV.
Sounds.
I gotta say,
I mean, it's slim pickings. I'll take what I can get.
This isn't the worst one.
This one just, it just rubs me the wrong way.
It's bad, but it has a melody, you know? Like, it has, it's a song. It's not like meandering whispers.
God wants silver, God wants gold, God wants the sacred note. God wants gigolos, God wants giraffes, God wants politics, God wants a good laugh.
I like that part a little bit. Do I want a whole album of this? Absolutely fucking not, but...
God wants friendship, God wants fame, God wants credit, God wants blame. God wants poverty, God wants wealth, God wants insurance, God wants...
God, okay. God help us all.
Was one of the lines, God wants gigolos, God wants giraffes?
Yep.
My God.
Yeah. Maybe that's going over my head. I don't think I get that one.
No, it's not. It's definitely not. It's just so fucking dumb.
I think about like God's song, like Randy Newman, you know, like other, like that, you know, the lyrics on that one.
He gives us all his love.
I mean, that's a different song, but even those lyrics I take. Right. That was my least favorite. I skipped the Stravinsky adaptation and the opera record because I didn't think that counted. I wasn't going to start like adding things to the list. I was pretty burned out by that point.
Just fight the battles you're asked to fight.
Yeah, I'll fight the battles I'm asked to fight. I also don't think of him as being a guy who can like write one of those. Like, he's not Paul McCartney, right? Like,
no, he's not particularly.
He's obviously musical. He knows how to write
a good
great
bassist.
Melody, but yeah, like he's not. I don't think of him as a composer. Maybe I'm being like an ass in saying that, but. I don't think of him as a fountain of melody.
We would have picked up on that by now if he had those qualities.
But I'll tell you what. Is This the Life We Really Want? It's a record he made with Nigel Godrich. I really like that.
It's from like 2020?
It was fairly recent. It was. I don't think it was 2020. Maybe it was a little earlier than that. But it was produced really well. He sings really well on it. Because he like it's almost like the collaboration like pushed him to make some edits and like buckle down. The arrangements are really good. The songwriting is really sharp. There's a couple songs on there that I think are really strong. There's a song called The Last Refugee that I like. There's a song called Deja Vu that I think is good. I was really genuinely surprised how much I liked that record, especially after everything I'd heard and sort of figuring it would get worse, but it didn't. I think he's like stronger now than he was 30, 40 years ago.
Well, and that was also, was it produced or just keyboards was, no, Nigel Godrich produced. I mean, that's going to do a lot. Jonathan Wilson on keyboards.
Mm.
That guy's really good in the
And I think him
too.
And Nigel Godrich really like, not butted heads, but like, you know, he was, he pushed him. And I think when that other voice isn't there, you get like, you know, radio waves.
Do you think that if Nigel Godrich could do for Roger Waters what Rick Rubin did for Johnny Cash?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. He's like a old musician.
What do you think,
whisperer.
Nate?
I mean, probably not. But I mean, I love Nigel Godrich. I mean, he's one of my favorite producers ever, right? But yeah, you know what's crazy about those Johnny Cash records? How old do you think he was when he recorded those?
Because he sounds like he's 90, but was he only in his 60s?
Yeah, he's like 58, like,
oh my
to
God.
Like 63. Yeah. Oh, and like Roger Waters is older now.
Cigarettes.
Or older when he made that record.
Far older, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a harder life. It's a harder life that Johnny Cash lived.
There was some, song that was just released by with Miley Cyrus and Dolly Parton. And Dolly Parton's like in her late 70s or something, and just like definitely sounds way more impressive. And wow. Johnny Cash did it at like 61.
Do you want to hear the song that I liked, or
let's do it? This? Yeah, we'll finish strong here. What okay. do you got?
I checked out the Dark Side redo. That was just like, it was fine. It was obviously not comparable to the original. Looking back on it, I appreciated the ambition of Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. Concept was interesting. There's a couple on there that weren't bad, but this kind of was what I thought it was going to be, with the exception of this one record, which was surprising.
All right, is this the life we really want? 2017. What track are we checking
out here? Last Refugee, I thought was pretty good. That or Deja Vu, one of those.
All right, let's do The Last Refugee. Yeah, I haven't heard this one at all.
It's just like interesting. What God wants, God gets.
God help us all.
Giraffes and gigolos.
I had that melody from Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking stuck in my head, though. I mean, so maybe in that way he succeeded. It's just like.
All right, here we go. 2017. Is this the life we really want? Up there for most condescending album title ever, but
it's fine.
Last
it's
Refugee. Fine.
He's
here
like
we go.
The Bill Maher of music.
We just get past the spoken word radio poll. It's fine.
And it's also the end of broadcasting for Thursday, the end of broadcasting for 1970.
That's that Nigel Godrich synth.
This is like already better than everything we
just sounds like Beck.
Westerly 6 to gale 8, occasionally severe gale 9.
At the third stroke, it will be 11, 24, and 50 seconds. At the third stroke, it will be 11.
That sounds like All I Want.
Yeah. At the first stroke, in 5 years.
I hear the Ziggy Stardust.
New Year to you.
So you like the one where he's not singing at all? Noted.
No, he comes in eventually.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.
Anytime now, Roger.
I forget where he comes. There.
Lie with me now. Tree skies, show me the shy, slow smile you keep hidden by warm brown eyes.
I definitely hear the pitch correction software.
He sounds
younger
better.
In this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Catch the sweet hover of lips just barely apart.
Like, I could get into this, you know? Like, yeah. I could... If I was in the right mood, it's going to strike me.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just Nigel Godrich carrying him, though.
It is. You
bit.
Do hear a lot of Nigel Godrich on it. Yeah. But there's a focus on sonics that's, like, not happening earlier.
Sure.
Yeah. Certainly better produced. It's still quite boring.
Yeah. I'm with Nate.
Well, that's what I got for both of you. And
you did great, Matt. You did great.
I worked really hard on this. I did. And I want to say to all Roger Waters fans, I do think he's a great songwriter. There are like whole records of his that I love. It's just, yeah, I think he needs somebody to spar with. Like, as much as he seemingly hated those guys by the end, like, if he wasn't like pushing up against somebody, it's just not the same.
You know, the other thing with Roger Waters is like, yeah, there was a phase where he was a very good songwriter, but I think it's like he's a phenomenal bassist and it's kind of forgotten about in his later, you know, output. Like my favorite stuff from Roger Waters is just like him jamming on bass on like stuff from like, I don't know, 1969 to like 75. Like those jam outs, he's playing phenomenal bass. It's like both groovy and melodic, and it like always serves the song. I think he's an amazing bass player. He's very good songwriter for a period of time. And so I don't want to say like he's invariably bad. He's part of the art, one of the architects for some of the music that's touched me most in my life. But yeah, I mean the later stuff, like if you can't shit on it, like I mean, what are you doing? Like it's objectively terrible.
It's like when I was talking about McCartney's solo career and criticizing some of it. It's like, you know, he's one of my favorite songwriters.
There's still some gems in that though too.
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously McCartney's solo career is a lot stronger, but you know, it's the same thing. It's like, I think we can criticize these people that we idolize at the same time. They can have a record or a period of time where it's just not for you. And that's fine to talk about. So don't come after me is all I'm saying.
Their bank accounts are certainly robust enough.
Yeah, he's all right. He's doing good.
He certainly is.
Well, yeah, that's all I did. And I'd say it was about maybe 4 hours of listening to this.
That you'll never get back.
There is, you know, that voice is like, it was a little grating at first, but after a while I kind of got into it. It was like, all right, it's not, you know, it's like Randy Newman or something where it's like, you can kind of start enjoying it if you listen to enough of it.
Sounds like Stockholm Syndrome to me.
I think he's the greatest. Yeah. Well, let's pivot to something that is not a Roger Waters solo album, I hope. To Nate, what have you been listening to
this week?
The Division Bell.
Listen, my opinion.
The anti-Roger Waters album.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so I think that, you know, at the intro, you introduced me as the bad boy of the podcast, or I don't know whatever you said, but something
bad boy of the podcast world.
You know, the podcast
the ne'er-do-well of losing my opinion.
Yeah, the ne'er-do-well. And, you know, I think in the past, what I presented was really graphic rap skits.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Scarlett Johansson farts in the sex playlist. So I figured, you know, why don't I give you more of that and present a completely forgotten classical composer from the 1910s.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, it's very different. So this is, in contrast to some of those, this is a just very earnest promotion of a completely forgotten about artist.
All right.
And when I say this person's like completely forgotten about, you'll see on the YouTube counts, you know, maybe like there'll be like 200 people have viewed these, listened to these tracks. And like on Spotify, you guys are both more popular than this person. Not to say you guys aren't, you know, wildly successful indie artists.
Yes.
Hans Zimmer inspired indie artists, whatever you said. But, you know, this person in the 1910s. So I should say who this is. So it's the composer Leo Ornstein.
Oh, of course.
You know him?
Yeah. Yeah, great stuff.
Oh, you know him? All the time. Okay.
Yeah.
And are you, you're fucking with me or?
Yes. Leonard Warren's what?
Leo Ornstein.
Leonard Warrenstein.
Well, I figured maybe Matt would know this person because I listened to him. I got into him when I was like 19 or 20.
And I say the name again. Sorry.
Leo Ornstein.
Leonard Bernstein.
Leo Ornstein.
Yeah. It's actually Bradley Cooper with an even larger nose.
With prosthetic nose, yeah. What country?
He's from
Eastern Europe here, Central Europe?
What was Russia is now Ukraine.
Okay.
And so he was born in 1893 or 92. He emigrated to the United States when he was in like 1906 or 1907. And, you know, to escape persecution, he was a Jewish composer. And, you know, as my great grandma, I remember telling me as a little kid, living in the Caucasus Mountains as a Jew in around 1910, not fun, not super chill. And so he emigrated over as a small kid. And then he went to what was a precursor of Juilliard. Mm. And he was like an incredibly accomplished pianist who had, you know, toured the United States at an early age, playing like 7 concerts per week, making a lot of money doing it, but kind of burning himself out because he would practice like 13 hours a day and everything like that. And then he started composing for himself, and he was at the forefront of what was like considered like the new, you know, modernist movement in classical composition. And he was really kind of known as like the bad boy of the classical world for his use of what are, you know, tone clusters. You guys know what that is? It's like,
is it something you have to go to like urgent care for?
Yeah.
Is it like if you played like an F sharp, a G sharp, and an A, like all together?
Yeah. It's at least 3 half, you know, semitones.
3 half steps played simultaneously.
And so for then, that was like fucking wild and everything. And, you know, some of his early compositions are like, they're obviously pretty dissonant and like aggressively so. And so he built up this like notoriety. And he at some point became one of the most prominent American composers around like 1915 or so. And then two things kind of happened. He got completely burnt out with the touring circuit. And also his compositions became less wild and dissonant, to the point where the like avant-garde movement just kind of like discarded him.
You're not cool anymore, man. Where are your tone clusters?
Yeah. And so he then started incorporating some of that, but in a like what I think is a more mature way, sound, which takes some of the like aggressive and dissonant parts and like kind of crazy rhythmic structures, and then balances it with what I think are like these achingly beautiful melodies that are like, and a lot of what sounds to me kind of like, you know, Ravel or Debussy, but if they didn't use like whole tone scales, instead used like harmonic minor.
Oh.
So it sounds like these like aggressive and dissonant things, and then like these like kind of Hebraic sounding melodies. And I think what really got me into this guy is like, I heard him when I was like 19 or 20. And I think, Matt, you kind of remember maybe the piano playing I would do then is like just an insanely shittier version of what this guy accomplishes, which is like kind of bombastic, aggressive piano and that like builds and then sounds like vaguely Eastern. And like when I heard this guy, it was like somebody scratching a musical itch. It's like, oh, fuck, I've wanted to hear something like this my whole life. And so like when I discovered this guy, I was very into it. And so why don't I share something so you have some context of what this sounds like.
I still haven't made up my mind if Nate is trolling us or
if this I'm like buying in.
A real thing, if we're going to hear just like a bunch of fart noises now, or if this is a person that really existed.
I'm sending you that margarita song with the one margarita. I'm going to open my legs.
What the fuck?
You don't know that song?
I've heard that.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what that is. We have not yet at all, I don't think, really talked about classical music.
That's the other
on
reason.
This podcast.
Yeah.
This is the first.
I know this is a pop and rock, you know, dominant podcast. And so for good reason. I mean, who the fuck wants to listen to classical? I'm not really well versed in classical music enough to talk about it that in a very informed manner. But I figured, you know, initially I was thinking like, what am I going to cover? You're like, what have you been listening to? This past year, I probably listened to Death of a Ladies Man about 45 times.
Oh, hell yeah.
And you guys just talked about it. So this is what I pivoted into.
I remember you listening to, around that time, listening to Moondog. And this is before anyone was talking about Moondog. So I heard him.
The New York layabout?
Yes. I heard him through Nate. And you also listened to Raymond Scott at that time.
Yeah, Raymond Scott. Well, Raymond Scott, I featured on the last podcast.
You did.
It was part of the challenge playlist.
Not in a flattering way, but yeah, you did feature him.
Raymond Scott was the actual inspiration for the challenge playlist.
Oh, boy. Yeah, have not tried out that playlist.
Oh, man. You're missing out.
Good for you.
Has anyone reached out to you and been like, oh, man, I got to Sam Hall by by Johnny Cash?
Not yet. We're waiting.
We're waiting.
Okay.
We'll let you know.
Yeah.
All right. I'm waiting with bated breath.
Yeah, we have not really dug into classical music at all. I've had some ideas percolating on the subject, but nothing stuck. So I'm glad you were the first to come in here. And
I'm glad I went with the low-hanging fruit of Leah Ornstein instead of like Beethoven. I'm
looking at a screenshot of sheet music here.
Is this like, did Nate put this up? Is this but is it?
No, this looks real.
I actually was very relieved because I just found these.
Holy shit, this guy lived until 2002?
Yes, so I only told you the first like 20 years of this guy's life. The rest of this guy's life is fucking fascinating. So, right, he was born in the 1890s, lived to 2002, so he died when he was 109 years old.
What the fuck?
He wrote and composed, like I said, he just dropped out of the limelight, and he moved from New York to Philadelphia and opened up a music school. And in, I guess, the 30s or 40s, so there was two famous early students in this music school. Could you think of like a jazz musician who was in Philadelphia in the 40s and 50s? John Coltrane. John Coltrane, yeah. So this guy taught John Coltrane.
What the fuck?
When he was a teenager. If this guy never started the school, it's very possible John Coltrane just doesn't exist as a phenomenon.
Okay, we got to hear some of this guy's music now. We've talked about so much.
It is crazy that I've never even heard this name.
Yeah, I feel like I should announce this music the way like Leonard Bernstein would talk about Beethoven.
Yeah.
And now, all right, piano sonata number 4, moderata con molto.
All right, here we go, from 1918.
There's parts that are aggressive and it kind of chills out. And it's just like a lot of tension release.
Sounds really complicated.
Like totally takes the Claire de Lune part.
That's the Debussy.
Yeah. But you're gonna see it builds back up.
This is good shit.
Yes, yeah. Mesmerizing.
I'd do that all day.
Yeah. I don't want you to just play a whole 20-minute thing, but if from there, it just, I feel like I'm on like Analyze Fish, where he's like, you just got to go like 18 minutes and like 32 seconds. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing with a lot of classical compositions that like, you know,
yeah,
viewing them in the whole thing, you get more out of it. But
I always had a hard time listening to classical like on the subway. Because I wouldn't be able to hear anything, and then all of a sudden it would be like ear bleedingly
deafening.
Loud. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I think that in there you kind of got some of the like the contrasting like dissonant tension building, you know, that is then like resolved with like, you know, these kind of like gentle but like Hebraic sounding melodies. And so it's just like fucking right in like the, I'm in the middle of the Venn diagram of like
what Nate Saffron wants to hear.
Someone who would appreciate this. Yeah, exactly. And so I think, you know, in terms of the other shit that was interesting in this guy's life, like he drops out, he opens up that music school, trains Jimmy Smith, the B3 organ player, and John Coltrane. And like, he then people just like forgot about this guy entirely, which is nuts because like in the late 1910s, there was like biographies written about this guy. He was like touring all over the country. And he wasn't found again until some musicologist tracked him down in the 1970s. So like 50 years after he dropped out, living in some trailer park in Texas. And she like made it like her mission to like promote this guy's work. And then he started composing again.
Wow.
As an 80-year-old man. And he composed through to the age of 96, where he wrote his last piano sonata, which I've included that one too. Let me share that. But yeah, it's like this he wrote, at the age of 96, and then he continued living to the age of 109. So he spanned the 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries.
That's insane.
Yeah. And this piano sonata, this eighth piano sonata, he's like, what I shared is one of the more quiet and like subdued tracks, but some of it is like intensely aggressive and dissonant. And so it's like, he didn't chill out at all at like, you know, 96 years old. It's pretty wild.
I was also just reading that his son was a computer scientist and helped design like a modern laser printer.
Yeah, Severo Ornstein.
Yeah.
Well,
what's
kind of interesting about this guy is that for like a while, now you could find his stuff on YouTube or Spotify. But for a while, like there was only a handful of CDs of this guy's music. If you wanted to hear his stuff, his son put like a bunch of compositions up on some shitty website that he made. And it was just like, that would be if you wanted to hear this guy's stuff, that'd be how you'd find it.
Wow. This is blowing my mind, this whole thing. Are we doing it from any particular point in this piano sonata number 8?
I think that I set it timestamp because it's part of like a 20-minute work, but this is the movement.
16 minutes in here.
Yeah.
A half-mutilated cradle, Berceuse.
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing here. Okay.
Yeah, some of his titles are pretty metal.
That is pretty metal.
I do hear a Ravel thing. Vibe on this for a while.
They put me in the zone. Forgot we were recording. It's definitely, it sounds more like modern than the piece we were just listening to. There's more modern flourishes to it.
Yeah. I think that in that other one was written like, I think 1918 or 1920 or something like that. And I think after that, he you know, learned jazz, and I think there's more of a jazz influence in some of his, you know, subsequent music. But yeah, it kind of sounds like cinematic, like it would be in like a movie like The Conversation or something like that. Which, by the way, has a great theme, a great piano theme. Have you ever seen that?
I still haven't seen that one.
Yeah, you should check it out. Good. Just maybe share one more. Because this one has an example of him incorporating other instrumentation besides just piano. So he has some like symphonic work and some work that's just like with a string quartet. And he has a pretty great cello sonata number 2. So he is, you know, capable of arranging for other instruments. But I think that like in terms of, if I had to say this guy has like 2 masterpieces, it's that piano sonata number 4. And then this piano quintet, which this is like the opening movement of that. And it's just like very interesting rhythmically. And you could hear his piano is like, you know, still top notch and basically everything we're describing, just with like kind of interesting accompaniment of a string quartet.
All right. We're going to start right at the top here. Piano quintet, OP number 92, Weber. I don't know how classical music titling works, but. If Nate says it's good, I'm ready to dig in here.
Nate made me a classical music CD way back when. It was like a greatest hits thing.
Oh, yes.
And I think that
I forgot about that.
I knew so little about classical music. I think when I was first talking to him about it, I was like, oh, like, you know, do you like Pachelbel's Canon or whatever? And then he was like, do you like Happy Birthday?
Oh, man, I sound like a fucking asshole, but I mean, Pachelbel's Canon, like,
that's for beginners,
like the vitamin C graduation song.
All right, here we go. More Ornstein. Oh, yeah, it's rocking. This one makes me think of like a bunch of like winged demons spawning out of a hole.
Yeah.
Night of Bald Mountain. Or...
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah.
One of the top comments is based Leo.
What I was, this goes hard as fuck. Yeah. I'm headbanging right now. Yeah. I agree.
Those comments are funny. That's good.
What year is this from?
This one's from like 1920, something along those lines.
So that's more recent, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, what, you know, American composers, why have I heard of like Aaron Copland and not this guy? This is some good shit here.
I mean, Aaron Copland is great, but yeah, I agree. You know, I think they should both be donos, you know. But yeah, it's, I think that, you know, that guy, that comment of like, this goes hard as fuck. I think that like a lot of classical music goes like so much fucking harder than metal. Like contemporary.
Yeah.
And it's
Beethoven.
Yeah, and it's I think because of the timbre instrumentation, it's just not thought of that way. But like that's to me like super aggressive and like hard hitting, and like, yeah, I love it that it again, it's like constantly these like aggressive, like dissonant builds, and then like the resolution is just like exactly what I want. It's like, I don't know if you guys have like, there's like certain musical itches that you have that like some some, you know, it's great when they get scratched and you're like, ah, fuck yeah, that's exactly my jam. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I got. I mean, I guess it's not at all what you might have.
No, this is dope.
Wow, the bad boy coming in with something different. No, this was equally as enjoyable.
Oh, good.
I'm shocked I've never heard of this guy. I mean, yeah, there are plenty of classical musicians that I, you know, I'm aware of and should probably know more, like Scriabin or whatever.
Scriabin's amazing.
Yeah,
I don't know what that is.
Oh, you should check it out.
Scriabin.
That's the next one. Isn't that, is he the one with the synesthesia, or is that somebody else?
Yeah, he had synesthesia and he wanted to create this giant tone organ, which is fucking absurd. It was just like, it was when he was going to play music. I mean, basically people do this now. Like I generated one of these myself with like an Arduino. It's like you play certain notes on a keyboard, you know, light up like, you know, it was supposed to trigger lights, right? Because with synesthesia, he would hear colors. Right, he would see colors in his head when he heard certain tones, so he wanted to display that for his audience, and so that they could see, you know, what his mind was processing. But like, you know, this was over 100 years ago, and like, there's no real way to make that happen.
No audience for that yet. No lighting rigs.
Yeah.
Wow. With the Nate Safran episode, I always know we're going to get a surprise, and this is just as much a surprise as any.
So, oh, good.
This is nice. This hit the spot here.
Just two composers that we talked about today.
Two widely celebrated composers.
Who hit their stride later in life, I guess.
Their stride later in life.
One just took a musicologist to find them in a trailer park, and then the other one needed Nigel Godrich to just tell him no for the first time in like 40 years.
We need more than one melody for 10 tracks. I learned a lot today.
Yeah.
I actually did learn a lot. I learned a lot in the lead up to in researching for this episode. I learned a lot about Roger Waters and what he does. Things were confirmed. Mostly things were confirmed for me. But yeah, this was an eye-opening episode.
I also feel like I got something out of your portion, because I wondered, was I just too harsh on the Roger Waters solo career? And no, I'd never have to listen to that shit ever again. You closed the book on that. That's terrible.
Yeah. Again, I'll enjoy and defend the Final Cut all day long. I can't give his solo career the time of day. Although I did learn my favorite of the bunch is actually your least favorite Waters track. So that was very interesting.
That was the one you texted me about saying, hey, we can play this one? That's ridiculous. It was, yeah. That is ridiculous. Because I independently thought that was the worst one.
That's great. All right. Well, wrapping up the special edition of the pod today. Do we have any plugs, anything we want to promote? Or we don't have to. We don't necessarily have anything every week.
We already plugged my OnlyFans. So I'll just give a tell people if they want to listen to Leah Ornstein. So on Spotify, I would check out the fourth sonata.
I'm doing it.
Piano sonata, the piano quintet, and maybe the second cello sonata. And there's an interview with this guy on YouTube where he's 109 years old. So that's cool to check out.
That sounds pretty fascinating.
Wow.
Yeah, what's going on in my neck of the woods? I got a new music video coming out in just 2 days from when this drops. March 22nd, my video for Rebuild the Circus. Probably my favorite music video I've gotten to put out there. Great animation by Saul. So get pumped for that.
I've seen it. It is great. Overnighter, new Thin Lyr single coming out April 1st. It is now on my social media account, the pre-save link for the Spotify track and Apple Music and everywhere else you can listen to songs. Produced by Matthew E. White at Space Bomb. Really excited for this EP to come out. More news to come.
All right. Well, you out there in podcast listener land, if you like what you heard today, make sure you subscribe to Losing My Opinion so you never miss a future episode. You can follow Losing My Opinion on Instagram, TikTok, or X.
Nice.
All at Losing My Opinion. And I didn't do a segment today, so what argument
did I make? That's crazy.
Yeah, it was nice waltzing in here with no prep. What God Wants Part 2 is not the worst solo Roger Waters track, and I could be wrong now.
I don't think so.
No, that was too melodious.
That wasn't, no. I feel like, yeah. But I don't think so.
Yeah.
But like I don't think so.
No, you can't get
I'm
him.
Too
you
gifted. Can't get him. I can't. Yeah, I'm too good gifted. To stoop down to his level. Yeah. That's the problem.
I think Matt's was all right. You have to sound yeah. like really distressed.
Yeah, there's like a.
Like your hand is on the life alert button.
Or somebody has to be. Stalling from over here!
You're.
That's how you do it.
You're struggling to dial your jitterbug.
Yeah. Thank you, Nate, as always. Please
thank
come
you,
back.
Nate.
Please come back sooner next time.
Yeah, come
I'd
back soon.
To, yeah.
We've missed you.
Sounds good.
And I'll say so long, suckers. We'll see you next week. Join the Leo Ornstein fan club. Let's build this movement.
Yeah, you can find him on Tiger Beat.
Dog needs a home. A shelter from pigs on the wing.